What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. This is the final episode in our three-part series paying tribute to Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign, one of the most legendary bands in Naptown music. The group formed in the late 1960s and began performing as the Ebony Rhythm Band. The Ebony Rhythm Band played some of their earliest gigs on the Avenue and became the house band for the Indianapolis soul music label Lamp Records. During the early 1970s, they left Naptown for California and released their debut album as the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign in 1973. Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign achieved their greatest success during the 1970s. They performed with some of the biggest stars in American music, like B.B. King, Earth, Wind & Fire, Isaac Hayes, and Jackie Wilson, and their recordings received serious airplay, even appearing on Billboard's R&B Hot 100 chart. Today, Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign remain a cult favorite with soul music fans around the world. And last year, the group had new releases on labels in London, England, and Tokyo, Japan. Stay tuned for an hour of words and music with three of the band's founding members, Pam Tanner Davis, Ricky Jackson, and Lester Johnson. Let's start this week's show with a track from the new Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign album, 69 Cents, released by P. Vine Records in Tokyo, Japan. This is Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with That Is Why, featuring Pam Tanner Davis on lead vocals. That was the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with That Is Why. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with three of the group's founding members, vocalist Pam Tanner Davis, keyboardist Ricky Jackson, and bassist Lester Johnson. Let's join their conversation as they reflect on the legacy of Indiana Avenue.
We talked about the group playing with the Psychedelic Light Show on Indiana Avenue at the Blue Eagle. And I did want to ask each of you about how the legacy and history of Indiana Avenue has influenced your lives and careers in music. Lester and Pam, I know this had a pretty significant influence on you. Lester, you told me some of the first gigs you ever played were with Harvey Cook on the Avenue.
It was because I'm older than either Pam or Ricky. So for me, it really was my first introduced. That was my first introduction to playing and getting paid. I played with Harvey at the old Paradise Inn on Indiana Avenue. So the Avenue itself was starting to fade, but I was playing at the old Sunset after hours. I was playing, well, me and Ricky, by the time you got me, we were still playing at the
Place to Play
and yeah. Fred Douglas, I believe.
Right.
And we were playing at the after hours there. Then the Place to Play was still open. So there were still venues down there that were still open, but some of the venues were starting to shut down, like the Flame, I think, shut down. Mm-hmm. The Missile Room shut down. George's Bar had been shut down. But there were still places down there. For me, that was my first introduction to playing there. And I played there with the Moonlighters at the Blue Eagle before I went in the Army in the mid-60s, even before I joined the Funk. So I was already playing on the Avenue, and I already had met a lot of the quote-unquote Avenue people, mm-hmm. like Pat's Hotel on the Avenue, Ida Gillis, the record shop, Arlene's House of Music.
Right,
Arlene. We used to run through Ida Gillis on that, because you could go in on Indiana Avenue and you could come out on, I think that's North Street. And we used to run through there just to that was a dare. Like we were in high school. Man, you run through the all way through the other side. We would run through there, man, and We were just curious as what we see. Mainly, we'd just be a lot of drunk people laying around like this.
Yeah.
They didn't pay us any attention, but to us, we thought we had done something.
I mean, I think for the Avenue and the Blue Eagle was probably the first time that outside of, I think that might have been before we went to the place to play.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess I kind of started there as this band, you know, because I played there. The place played with Cy Jones and them guys back in the 68.
Pam, you went to Attic.
I came in later, a little late. All I remember is Lester telling me, okay, now look, get in here. He said, I want you to sit over here by the bandstand. Okay, yeah. He was very protective. You know, the guys were very protective of me, like at the Blue Eagle, you know. Yeah. And they say, sit over here by the bandstand now, so won't nobody mess with you. And I'm like, I'll be fine, you know. But it helped me grow a little thicker skin, because you never know when something might break out, you know. But they always were very protective of me when we played those places. Yeah, definitely.
Compared to today, though, I think, to be honest, looking back in retrospect, they were really pretty safe compared with today. I mean, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Compared to now.
It was basically just a fist fight.
Yeah, because
right.
Like at the Surfside 7, I mean, I used to hear so many horror stories about that place. And then I finally played there, and it was like, oh, it ain't so bad, you know?
Yeah. You know, fights then were just basically fist fights.
Yeah.
Drink too much.
Yeah, they'd make a bunch of noise and throw a few hands, then that was the end of it. And sometimes they just want the band, remember that? They would just want the band to keep playing.
Oh, absolutely. You're right.
It was a fight broke out. Just keep playing.
Just keep playing. Get louder. They, we didn't
drown it out.
Yes, Robert.
But I don't ever remember playing in any place but in one place where I was playing at that I actually saw somebody get actually hurt. And I was playing at the Sunset years ago before I met these guys. I was playing there with Billy Ball and the Upsetters playing After Hours.
Billy Ball.
And a guy got stabbed in the Sunset. Sunset Ballroom. That's the only time I actually ever remember anybody actually getting really physically hurt bad while I was playing at these places.
Yeah.
That's one time in all these years.
Mm-hmm. So this neighborhood played a crucial part in your personal history. It was really a training ground for you as a young musician in many ways. But I think it, you know, shaped both of you as well, and just the group in general, just that legacy, if nothing else. How did you feel about how the neighborhood was kind of dismantled in later years, and now all remnants of the music culture there have essentially been washed away. Any thoughts any of you want to share on how the city has handled that history?
It messed up all the big cities. It messed up Detroit, messed up Atlanta, messed up Indianapolis. From the interstate
urban
system,
renewal, interstate, the whole mix
of
things.
Well, the interstate is what did it. When they developed the interstate system, I mean, you know, Eisenhower developed it. It was a 50s thing, and then it fully manifested itself in the 60s. All the neighborhoods, because at that time, most black people lived near downtown areas. They didn't live in a suburban area. Mm-hmm. So when the interstate system came, it came right over by 12th Street.
Right.
My house, 33rd and Raider, and all this. So the interstate, I think, had a whole lot to do with messing up the Indiana Avenue, messing up a whole lot of black culture, not just here, but in Detroit, Atlanta,
Los Angeles, where
LA,
I live now.
Louisville. The interstate system does jack that all up.
Beyond that, beyond the interstate and IUPUI as well, which ended up absorbing a lot of what the interstate didn't take, what do you make of the city's sort of lack of recognition of what happened there? Do you feel like the city does recognize this? How do you feel about how the legacy is?
The city ignored it because the city, I think, basically didn't regard the residents of those communities as having much power and influence. So I think as a whole, I'm not trying to demonize anybody, but I think as a whole, they just basically didn't see black families as being that important. Mm-hmm. And so I think they just didn't really give much thought about the interstate or whether or not this land had any value or anything. And they made people think because they couldn't get redlining, they couldn't get home improvement loans and stuff to keep the properties maintained. And a lot of these people, like our parents, were all like really hardworking blue collar people that were honest, but they got shortchanged because they weren't seen as being important.
Yeah,
there was systemic racism. There were other social factors like the interstate system that just all came together and it was just a perfect storm.
People had to move somewhere else. Yeah. So if they could have walked to these establishments and support them, they couldn't no more.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Pam, Ricky, any thoughts you want to share on that? The legacy of Indiana Avenue as it relates to music history and black history in Indianapolis?
I was blown away. I'm going to tell you, the first time I came home, you know, once I moved away, the first time I came home to visit, I was blown away that the avenue looks like it does now. Because when I left, it was still the avenue. You know, there
was
still.
What year was that?
81?
80. Yeah, okay. I think 80. Yeah. So there were still businesses down there open, you know. And then I came and everything was just so different. It blew me away to see that. You know?
Bad or good? On an emotional level, how did it strike you?
Well, it struck me. No, it did not strike a good chord at all. I remember doing shows at the Walker, and you know, and it just, and I remember all the businesses down there. You know, Florsheim Shoes and all the different businesses that used to be down there. And it just, it's, you know, it kind of saddened me to see the changes, you know. I mean, I'm all for, you know, cleaning stuff up and, you know, changes and all of that. But it just took so much of the black history from it, you know, that I've always known it to be. You know, because, I mean, since I was a little girl, I remember hearing my mom talk about, you know, the avenue and the places they, you know, the bars that her and her friends used to hang out in down there and everything. And so it just kind of saddened me to see the changes that had taken place, because they didn't just remove buildings and businesses. They took history with them as well.
I remember the businesses by name, because to be honest, a whole lot of the business on the avenue catered to black patrons.
Absolutely.
Remember the pawn shops, the Matus brothers?
Matus, yeah.
Well, they were a pawn shop, but they also sold a whole lot of clothes and musical instruments. And so you could, if you wanted the latest hat, latest suit, high fashion suit, you went to Matus brothers. Then there was the Golden Nugget Cafe. That was a 24-hour cafe that was right on the corner of Indiana Avenue. And I forget what the Golden Nugget. There was Joyner's Chili Parlor. There was Pat's Hotel on one side.
I remember hearing my mom talk about
Pat's
George's Bar.
Was underneath it. And there was Arlene's House of Soul Music. There was Ida Gillis Bar. Because that was where, to be honest, a lot of people didn't shop downtown. We used to go down on the avenue and buy
That's
shoes.
Where a lot of black people bought
right,
their
because
stuff.
Because if you really wanted something fashionable, you had to go down on the avenue and find it.
And when the new music hit the streets, got to go to Arlene's and buy it.
Got
to go to Arlene's and buy it.
Old speaker, big old 12 or 15-inch speaker over the top of the doorway.
Yep,
and
sure
so
did.
When the latest songs would come on, especially if they played them on Randy Radio, WLAC, Gallatin, Tennessee.
Out of Tennessee, yeah.
They would, Orlean would play the latest records, including blues, and on Sunday did she play gospel. You heard it all, right?
And that's where black people went to buy their albums and their singles and all their music.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the echoes of Indiana Avenue. This is the final episode of our three-part tribute to the legendary Naptown band, Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. Let's pause and listen to two tracks from the band's 1976 album, Watching You, Watching Me, released by Shy Sound Records and produced by Carl Davis. We'll hear the album's title track, Watching You, Watching Me, followed by Where You Lead. Touch that dial. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from the Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. This is the final episode of our three-part series paying tribute to the legendary Naptown band Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. The Japanese label, Peavine, recently issued an album of unreleased recordings the band made between 1974 and 1975. We'll hear a track from that album now. This is Love So Strange, featuring Tony Roberts on vocals.
Just a few lines so you'd be knowing how I care. For you, and I need you, need you, need you. I'm the one who takes the blame. I just love you, love you, love you. That's so strange.
That was Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with Love So Strange. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign's Ham Tenor Davis, Ricky Jackson, and Lester Johnson. Let's return to their conversation.
Before we run out of time today, I do want to talk about the band's current plans, because you guys have a lot going on right now. You just had a 7-inch release out of London. These are outtakes recorded around 73, 74.
Right.
I think you have don't you have a full album coming out soon?
In Japan.
Some
of the same material that's on here will be on a different label, Peavine, and it'll be released in Japan actually in the next few weeks.
You have music happening on multiple continents right now. It's crazy, right? Tell me about the ongoing interest in this band, what you have coming up that you're working on, anything you want to share about that.
I don't know what we're doing now. I think it's just kind of overdue. None of us have ever stopped. I have never in my entire adult life not played my bass for 2 weeks. Never. So for me, it's just kind of like, I tell people it's my calling. There's a lot of great bass players, and I mean, you know, I'm not saying I'm whatever, but this is what I do. This is what my wife can tell you that. She has to put up with it 24 hours a day. You see her shaking her head over there. Poor thing.
I think what it is, I don't know. There's just an attraction there between us that we just want to just keep making music. We don't want to be famous. We just want to keep making music, okay? And just keep adding to our history and adding to our legacy and just keep, you know, until we leave here, okay? Yeah, we just want to keep making music. And that interest, I don't think, will ever die. As long as we're, you know, as long as we're alive, I don't think, we'll ever lose I don't think that will lose its glamour for us, you know, to just continue making music. I can't think of anybody I'd rather make music with than these guys, you know? Yeah. And I could be off somewhere doing something, you know? But, so we just, cause they're just good at it. They're just good at it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know they have pure hearts when it comes to music, making music. So we're just going to keep making music. Hey, if something pops and somebody wants to drop a sack of money on us, hey, we'll take it, you know. But if not, oh, well, we'll just keep making music and keep making music. And my great-great-grandkids will have all of this music and say, this is what my grandma did, my great-grandma did, and, you know, or whatever. So we're just going to continue to make good music.
Now, we're not extreme. None of us are wealthy. But I bet you couldn't find no people that are happier than we are.
Oh, yes. I bet you. And it's so nice that even though I have to go back to the fact that Now and Again Records, well, they brought us all back together after all those years.
2005,
if it wasn't 2003, for that, we probably wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah.
We kind of went our way. I moved to Florida back in 89, you know, and I started playing with bands and doing different things. That was really brought us back together.
Yeah, there's so many people. Eothen?
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Eothen Alapat of Now Again Records out in California, who reissued the Ebony Rhythm Band sessions back in the early 2000s. You know, we're talking about the label in London releasing this, the label in Japan, P-Vine, releasing the sessions. What do you make of this ongoing interest? Because it just never goes away, right? It's just always bubbling up.
There's even more to it now.
Why is the band's music still speaking to new generations?
Drugs Ain't Cool was an underground, and we had no idea that DJs in Europe had taken Drugs Ain't Cool and sold Heart Transplant.
Yeah.
And were playing it in all these discos in Europe. We had no idea. And I think that's kind of what revived some of the interest. I think why it's happening is that what we did then and even now is organic. In other words, what we do is kind of natural, and I think people can feel it. It's not contrived. It's just
guys playing together.
Yeah.
Playing music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the music on some of the stuff is. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was not a whole lot of technology involved.
No, not much technology involved. Now, we are using some technology. All groups are because we're recording digital. We're not recording analog.
Yeah.
So we have the advantages of digital cut and paste and. We use it modestly and sparingly. We're not like some people where they just come in, everything is just auto tune, and they record one bar at a time. It takes them 6 months to create one song because they're not really musicians. We are musicians, so we can play a whole song. What we have to do is end up chopping out stuff, not playing it in little segments like or something. We can actually Yeah. Once we start playing, we don't even think about how long it is. We have to ask somebody, how long was
that?
We just start playing. That's it.
Yeah, like we did the other day.
Pam, anything you want to say about that, the enduring appeal of this music and the enduring interest around the world in what you guys did?
It's good music. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Different music.
Yeah, it's different.
Sound, there's something loud that does it.
It's not run-of-the-mill,
Sounds like something else.
It'll catch your ear. You'll hear it and you'll go, wait a minute, I wonder who that is, you know. And it'll make you go and research it and find out who's playing that good music. You know, the music is still good. It's still good. I think it's in and of itself is enduring, you know. So that's why I said we have to just keep making music.
Let's pause and listen to a track from the new Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign album, 69 Cents. This is See the Light. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. That was Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with See the Light. Let's return to our conversation with the group.
I want to give each of you a chance to share any final thoughts, anything you want to share about the band's legacy. Yeah. Lester, you want to go first?
Only thing I can say is we're going to keep on trucking. So anybody that thinks that we're throwing in the towel or anything, we've lost a lot of members. But we fully intend to produce music as long as we possibly can in the hopes that it will be something that people will enjoy and play.
Be motivated. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, that's it. Yeah. That's it. That's all. That's really my only purpose in doing this. I mean, and I think the others are, too, because we sure ain't getting rich.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's so nice that we're at this time in our lives that we can come together after all these years. Mm-hmm. You know, find time. You find that time. I'm finding time. I mean, I've been on 4 times this year already. Well, normally it's only once a year, you know. But I plan to try to be home more often, you know, work on more original music, work together, you know, and keep it going. Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep it going.
Yeah.
You didn't hear about Pam, did you?
Boy.
She moving back. We'll talk
he talking about
that.
She moving back.
We'll talk later.
Get rid of winter and I'll move back.
She did yesterday.
No, for me, it's just lovely. It's lovely to still be making music with these guys, you know. And this band is just so... You know, it's just so highly respected, even though we've lost members and stuff. When they see us, you know, it's like everybody has nothing but just wonderful things to say about this band and our music and our history and our legacy. And to me, that means a lot. That means a lot, you know. To this day, it's like, you know, didn't you used to sing with Ebony? And I'm like, yeah. Man, and they'll start singing one of the songs, you know. That just still does it for me. That still does it for me. Because that lets me know that the music, it has to be good. If they're, you know, if they haven't forgotten it and they can just immediately strike up one of our tunes like that, it left an impression on them, you know. And I love that about our music. So we're just going to, like he said, we're just going to keep making music and keep making good music. And, you know, while we're here.
I just never knew that we had the impact that we had.
That we've had,
I mean, for me, it was like that was what we did back there. And now we're doing something else. I mean, to come here at home and meet people that know about me and the music we've done is just wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
For real, yeah.
What about the guitarist who from California, who's on a session,
you know,
and he starts playing If I Close My Eyes, and he knows our song.
Yeah, this guy
never met any of us.
Never met him.
But he's heard our music from the first album,
yeah,
right,
and has memorized it and starts playing it.
Right.
Yeah,
starts playing the guitar part on If I Close My Eyes. He said, I love that song. And I'm looking at him like, what? You know, so we definitely have left a mark.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that because we'll continue to leave one.
I can't thank you all enough for taking time to be here today. I've interviewed you all individually, and I know we'll keep talking and keep doing interviews as life goes on. But today, it's just so special to have all three of you here in the studio. So I'm very grateful for each one of you making time to be here. I'm a huge fan of the work you've done, so thank you so much.
No
appreciate
problem.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. That's what I was telling Ricky. I said, I promised Kyle when I came to town.
It's been a while.
I said, we got to get there. And I told Ricky, I said, I don't know if you have any idea, but Kyle is an avid fan of the band. Mm-hmm. He's constantly posting stuff. He's constantly replaying interviews and constantly doing this and that. So I told Ricky, I said, we got to make time.
Thank you.
Got to make
time
for Kyle.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the final episode of our three-part tribute to Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. We've been speaking with three of the band's founding members, Pam Tanner Davis, Ricky Jackson, and Lester Johnson. Let's hear a track from their classic 1973 debut album. This is Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign with What It Is. That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you for tuning in to the final episode of our three-part tribute to Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. We'd also like to thank Pam Tanner Davis, Ricky Jackson, and Lester Johnson of Ebony Rhythm Funk Campaign. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find The Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do, do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do, do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.